Shabbat Shalom. And even though it's a little bit earlier this year than most years, the weather has been coming to us earlier. And since the barley is starting to get ripe, it's that time of the year again that we have the fun time to talk about the calendar. Years back, I used to hate it. It was my unfun time because of all the crazy stuff with the calendar, but now I really enjoy it because being here in Israel, you can actually see it. You see the calendar. You don't just have to look at it. You know, when I was a believer, first coming into the truth more than 30 years ago, we used to just get this tiny little pocket thing to tell us when the calendar was. When, you know, and it was like, okay, you know, it's on April this or October this. And then many, many years later, as you start to study it and you find out of Yahweh's biblical calendar, you know, you find out that here in Israel, which the biblical calendar is based on, that you could actually see it. You can see all the agriculture and see the things coming to confirm it. So we will talk about that today. The other thing, just to, before we start into it, is that what I found throughout the years, and like I said, I've studied this now for about 20 years, is that most people really don't understand the calendar. You know, when somebody was trying to tell me about the month starting by the crescent, they gave me 15 or 20 hours of videotapes, you know, back then, and watching this. Really, when you really, really think about it, I would say 95% of the things I've seen of calendar papers and calendar books, and I've read a lot of them, have hardly any scriptures, if that. You know, so if you're a crescent keeper, the reason for that is you can't find it in the scripture. You can't find one scripture even remotely that says we need to go inside a crescent for the beginning of the month. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I think when most people that I find talking to with the calendar, they really don't understand the concept of any of it. So, and a lot of times somebody is arguing against themselves. So my first question I like to ask somebody, and Yahweh willing, we'll get this online, is we're not in year one, you know? It's not one year that's lasted 6,000 years. If you go by the Jewish calendar, it's the year 57 something, whatever it is, 68 or something like that. If you're in the Roman calendar, we're in the year 2014. If you're in the biblical calendar, we're close to the year 6000. We don't know exactly, but we're getting close to it. But certainly we're not in year one. We haven't had one continual year. So if we're going to go from year to year, there has to be a dividing point. That's logical, and that's what I think the first thing people don't think about. So the first thing, if somebody is telling me or asking me about the biblical calendar or maybe saying, well, how do you know you're right? My first question is, well, how do you think the year should be divided? Since we're not in year one, there has to be a division, and usually the answer is, I don't know, you know, because they don't know. But actually, there's only two ways the year can be divided from all the calendars I've seen. And this is going back, you could look, I have many, many books on all ancient cultures, because I didn't just study the biblical calendar, I wanted to study all calendars, including the Romans and the Greeks, but mainly ancient calendars of the Babylonians, the Assyrians, and I find a lot of the heresies we have today are coming from some of these cultic calendars, going back to Babylon and whatnot. But if you look at the dividing of the year, there's really only two things you can come up with. You either divide the year by the equinox, which most civilizations have done since the beginning of time, or you're going to divide the year by the barley. And I haven't seen any calendar that has another way. I'm sure there could be. Somebody might divide the year by, you know, pigeon dung or something. Who knows? Who knows what they're going to come up with? But like I said, now, to start off right off the bat, and as we get into it, I'll continuously show you why it would be impossible to start the year by barley in Israel. Number one, just think about it. It's completely illogical. Something like the calendar, which everybody uses, right? Is it logical that you would need somebody to tell you about it? You know, how on earth can you keep Passover if that's the case? You know, that somebody has to tell you. The other thing is, barley is not something, it's not like conjunction. Conjunction happens at 1 second, the same second, every 29.5 days on average. It may vary a couple hours, but I say on average a month, a biblical month is 29 and a half days. So at that one point in time, no matter where you live on the earth, conjunction happened, the new month started somewhere. And now, within 24 hours, it'll go around the earth and you just wait till sunset. It's a real simple thing. So no matter where you are on the earth, everyone can know when conjunction is. With barley, on the other hand, there's not a barley harvest. There's not a worldwide barley harvest. I've had people tell me in years past about the barley harvest in Arizona and why it can't be the new year, because in Arizona there's not barley. Well, you know, not to put anybody down, but it really doesn't matter when there's barley in Arizona. And in America, most of the time, there's two harvests there. When I tell people here in Israel there's only one grain harvest, they're shocked. Because some of these people claiming to be experts, the same as the people writing about the lunar Sabbath, they claim there's two harvests here, grain harvests. And they're simply not. You live here, you'll see it yourself. That now starts the beginning of the grain harvest. It will go from the beginning of Aviv to Shavuot, and that's it. There is no other grain harvest throughout the year until next year. And then what will happen in the fall after Sukkot, when the fall harvest comes in, not of grain, but of wheat, dates, pomegranates, or not the wheat actually, the wheat is already in, but the dates, the pomegranates, the olives, the figs, and the fall harvest, then after Sukkot you'll plant for the next year. So logically think to yourself, Israel only came into this land in 1443 or 1447, whatever you want to go by as far as that. But how on earth did the year start before there? How would anybody know? You know, when Noah is on the ark, clearly there's a calendar because it says it. He went on the ark, you know, on the 17th day of the second month, till this, till that, and then a year later he's coming out, and they're giving specific dates. So how on earth did no one know when the date was? There certainly wasn't any barley when water covered the world. And a matter of fact, even when Israel is in Egypt, and this is what a lot of the barley hunters will go by, that scripture about, you know, when the hail came and the barley and the spelt were destroyed, but the wheat wasn't, because it wasn't in the ear yet. But what they don't tell you is the whole barley harvest in Egypt is completely different. In Egypt, they're planting in August, and by January, February, they already have their harvest. So again, and in Israel, it's the same. If you go to southern Israel, the barley harvest would be much different than if you just go in the north, maybe 3-4 hours up toward Tel Dan. So it's totally illogical, you know, that barley would be in, especially since the other thing is, Israel has been in diaspora for 2,500 years. So if barley is the beginning of the year, how on earth can anybody keep the Passover in their diaspora without knowing when barley is over here in Israel? So it's not even logical. It's not biblical. And I challenge anyone, show me one scripture that equates the beginning of the year to barley. Zero. None. A matter of fact, the only scripture that relates barley to anything in the beginning of the year is Deuteronomy 16:9, that you start your count to Shavuot when the sickle hits the standing grain. So yes, do you need barley for your wave sheaf ceremony? Yes, but it has nothing to do with Aviv 1. And that's where the Jewish calendar also goes off. Because the Jewish calendar is basing their year on Passover, which is the 14th day of the month, and not the first day of Aviv. Which again, is totally illogical. So if we just simply stick by the biblical mandate, which I'm going to go over today, it is really, really simple. And I praise Yahweh, we have our new book, it's online, we'll be printing it, that over the last couple of years, I have gotten probably hundreds of letters from people thanking me for doing these studies. You know, a lot of the book is studies that were done several years back, but because we keep it simple, we show historical references to how the people did it, we show the biblical commands to how it should be done, but it's not as difficult as people think. But again, if you're going to look at 20 hours of moon phases for the crescent and all this other stuff, and what degree the sun has to be tilted and all this, of course it's going to seem complicated, but it has nothing to do with the biblical calendar, as we'll see that as we go. So again, when you start, we'll start in Exodus 12:2. But that's the first mandate I want to sit down, because we're going to start with how does the biblical year begin, and then we're going to go to how to calculate your month. But clearly, there is nothing in the Bible that would remotely try to tell us that barley is the beginning of the year. As we're going to see from Genesis 1:14, the sun, the moon, and stars. The sun, the moon, and stars. And I'll read the scripture. Elohim said, "Let light sources be in the expanse of the heavens to divide between the day and the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons," that's Moedim, holy day seasons, "and for days and for years." So clearly, it's the sun, the moon, and the stars that calculate time, not barley. Barley may be an earthly witness that's, we don't have it wrong. Yeah, there are calendars like the original Julian calendar that was not calculating on a 365-day year, and all of a sudden, 20 or 30 years down the line, they're figuring, hey, wait a second, you know, our Passover is happening in the winter, so we're doing something wrong here. But actually, there's nothing that would remotely make us think that there's anything but the sun, the moon, and the stars to calculate the time. So Exodus 12:2 says, this month, Aviv, shall be the chief of months to you, or the head of months. It shall be the first of the months of the year. So the word Aviv, it literally means young, you know. It's young, it's new. So Aviv is the beginning of months. The Jewish calendar, where they also make their mistake, is they calculate the year from the seventh month. They don't start their year in Aviv. Aviv is not the beginning of the year to them. The first day of the seventh month, which the Bible tells us, is Yom Terah. You know, the day of acclamation, the day of clamoring. You know, some say the day of trumpets. It could be with blowing of trumpets. But they call that day Rosh Hashanah. Rosh, the head. Hashanah, of the year, the head of the year. But it's not the head of the year. But they claim that. So what they do is, their day one is the first day of the seventh month. Then they count back 177 days. And if Passover is after the equinox, then they say the year can start. But Passover isn't the first day of Aviv. Passover is the 14th day of Aviv. So I'm going to clearly show you that in biblical times, and even in early rabbinic times, in their own rules written in the Talmud and the Mishnah, it says you cannot start the year before the vernal equinox. So the Jewish people believe that. They believed it in the days of Yeshua, they believed it, as we'll see in the Elephantine letters. These are letters from the captives that didn't go in Babylon, that went down to Egypt. And they have the actual letters that these people wrote from around the year 475 BC to like 418 BC. So this is the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. This is a little bit after Solomon's temple was destroyed. And in every single letter, it's double dated. It's double dated with the Hebrew date and the Egyptian date. And all letters, no year starting before the vernal equinox. And they clearly say it in their records. So we know how they did it. And like I said, when people say, well, I'm not sure if that's right, it's somebody who doesn't understand anything about the calendar. Because when you ask them, well, how do you think the year starts? You get, oh, no. You know, so if you study it, there's not a lot of ways. There's not a lot of ways that you could split the year up. But there has to be an ending of one year and a beginning of another year. So if you want to arbitrarily think it's barley, that's your business. But it just doesn't make sense. And like we see, even today. Now, I've been living here 15 years. I've seen the barley harvest every year. And I can honestly say, and my wife can attest to this, I've seen it with my eyes. I'm not getting it from somewhere else. That I've seen the people that claim to be the barley hunters, you know, that are collecting the money and asking everyone to donate, which I don't know why you need to collect a lot of money to go barley hunting. It takes about a day of your time, maybe 2 days, and you go out and you drive around with a little bit of gas money. So I don't need to collect $10,000 or maybe more to go on a barley hunt. So right off the bat, you have to be suspect of people that are trying to collect money to go look for barley. And like I said, living in Israel, it's not a one-day harvest. The harvest starts maybe late March, beginning of April, and it goes all the way to Shavuot. So what will happen is, in any given year, if I want to call this Aviv, I can bring you right now and show you some ripe barley. If I don't want to call it Aviv, I'll go to a place where there's no barley. You can manipulate it so easily, as they do. And that's what makes you think, well, what is Aviv? One of the men who is a Karaite that a lot of people follow, I asked him one time personally. I said, how much barley do you need to call it Aviv? He said, as much as I can hold in my hand. That's not a lot of barley. You know, you could find roadside barley in almost any year, maybe even sometimes in February, you know. So logically, us being believers who understand that the barley is representative, why do you need the barley for the Feast of First Fruits? Because Yeshua is the first fruit. And that's why you need ripe barley. But he's not just the Messiah of Judah. He's the Messiah of all Israel. So you would have to have ripe barley at least in each section in Israel. And that's why I say, to call it Aviv in biblical times, you would need at least 50 to 60%. And we're going to see it here. We're going to see that Yahweh says, after you bring in the harvest, which definitely shows a later start. It's not just that there's a handful of barley somewhere. There's a harvest of barley. because everybody has to bring an omer. And an omer is not a sheaf. An omer is a measurement. It's 2 quarts. You know, it's the same thing with the manna in Exodus 16 when he says, take an omer of it. They weren't bringing a sheaf of manna. They were bringing a measurement of manna. So if you don't have at least 50, 60% of barley in the country ready, you can't call it aviv. Now last year, there was only about 10% barley, and they called it aviv. This year, it's the same thing, maybe 10%, maybe a little more. Now they didn't call it aviv. Now why didn't they call it aviv this year? For a real simple answer. Because they were even saying before they even looked, oh, there will be barley. You know, and now all of a sudden they're saying there's not enough lambs out there that are weaning on their mom, so we can't call it aviv. They're looking for any reason, because I was hoping they were going to call it aviv, even though it's not. Because it would have exposed them of how ridiculous it is. Because if they called aviv at the new moon last week, what would have happened is not only would the new moon be before the equinox, their Passover would have been before the equinox, and they would have had 2 Passovers in the same year. And they knew it, so they, no matter what, if there was aviv barley all throughout Israel, they were not going to call it aviv, because everyone would see then their measure of calculating's got to be wrong. The same way, if I'm telling you that it's Sukkot, and all of a sudden I'm wearing a coat and it's snowing outside, there's something wrong here. Because Sukkot doesn't come in the snowy season. Or if I'm keeping Sukkot, and it's like last year, they kept Yom Kippur, and it was 100 degrees. And during their Sukkot, there were no pomegranates, there were no olives, there were no figs. And they're calling it Sukkot in the middle of the summer. Something is wrong. And that's the point. The sun, the moon, and the stars calculate the time, and the harvest is that you know whether you got it right or not. The harvest here in the land. That it is the witness, the earthly witness of the heavenly signs. So I can tell you firsthand, you know, that Yahweh would never do that. He would never leave something as important to his calculation of Passover, something that believers are commanded to keep all over the world, to some guy over here running around looking for barley. It doesn't work that way. That's the Nicolaitan spirit. That's the spirit of the Pope. That's the spirit of Constantine. Wait a second, you can't start your year until I tell you. Okay, start your year. You know, now hail to me while you're doing it. Oh, and by the way, send your money through PayPal. All donations are appreciated and accepted. It's not the way Yahweh works. Yahweh works where every single person, no matter where you are in the world, can very simply see it. Because by the equinox, no matter where you are, you can tell very simply by the shadow when the year starts. And at the temple, Solomon built the temple. It talks about, Jack Finnegan talks about this in his book, A Bible Chronology. He built the temple that only on the day of the equinox, vernal equinox and autumn equinox, that the sun would shine through the golden gate. Only on those days. They found in antiquity many, many sundials at the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Because that's the way it was. Because when you look at a sundial, every day the shadow gets longer or the shadow gets less. And only on the day of the equinox, it's right in the middle. So it's not that hard to tell. We tested it here. We watched the sun all year. You could look every day and you'll see the sun either going north or coming south. But it'll be the same exact spot every year on the day of the equinox. And we see there's like this little pyramid on the other side of the Golan Heights. That every time in the day of the equinox, it's right over that little pyramid. And we watched it year after year after year. So this thing that ancient people didn't know how to figure out the equinox. Really, they can build the pyramids, right, on the 33rd parallel, but they can't figure out the equinox. It's absolutely ridiculous. Because anybody can. Anybody can figure it out. It's simply by a shadow. Psalm 104 and verse 19. He made the moon for seasons. The sun knows it's going down. So clearly the calendar is solar, lunar-based. It's by, like we said, the luminaries in the heavens, the sun, the moon, and the stars. The sun goes through a different constellation every 30 days. When it comes back to the original constellation, we know that the year can begin. Even Josephus talked about this in his works, where he said, now that the sun was in Aries, the sun could begin. So this is the way it always has been. It's always been by the sun, moon, and the stars. We never see anywhere in the Bible, or even in history, wherever barley was the only parameter for starting your new year. It just isn't there. Exodus 34, in verse 22, Because people will say, well, does it say in the Bible about the equinox? It certainly does. You shall observe a feast of weeks for yourself, the first fruits of the harvest of wheat, also the feast of ingathering after the turn of the year. And the word in Hebrew for turning of the year is tekufa. Tekufa. If you go out and you ask somebody here in Israel what tekufa means, they'll tell you it means the equinox. It's a full revolution of the sun, and that's what the equinox is. Where it talks about in Deuteronomy 11 that Yahweh watches the land of Israel from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, from equinox to equinox. That's why I say the first thing you have to do from the West, why it's very hard for people that have studied the calendar for a long time, and even leaders there, to listen. They're so close-minded because they have a Western mindset. And their mindset is linear. They're thinking on a linear way. They don't understand Yahweh's way is not linear, it's circular. And until you understand Yahweh's circular pattern, and there's no way to really understand the calendar until you come here and see it for yourself. Because you won't see that exactly when barley is coming out, other things are happening also. The first flowers of the pomegranates are already coming. And that in ancient times, they literally would put strings around there so they would know their first fruits. You know, so you need to be here to really understand fully the calendar. But it's interesting that the Feast of Sukkot, which most of the time in Scripture is called Sukkot, which means temporary dwelling or booth, there's several times where it's called the Feast of Ingathering. And every time it's called the Feast of Ingathering, it's when it uses the word tekufa with it, the turning of the year. Because it's what? It's the ingathering of the fruits. So again, the turning of the year happens twice. It happens in the spring, when the sun passes the equator at the vernal equinox. It happens in the fall, when it goes on the other side and it passes the equator back on the other side at the autumn equinox. Twice a year, the turning of the year happens. And the Bible tells us, you shall observe a feast of weeks for yourself, the first fruits of the harvest of wheat, also the feast of ingathering after the turn of the year, after the tekufa. So like last year, the Jewish calendar started their year before the equinox. So what happened? Their Sukkot was also before the equinox. So they started Sukkot in the summer. And it's not a summer holy day. So that's why you had Yom Kippur. It was 105 degrees. That's why they didn't have a harvest. And like I said, logically think to yourself, if you're an Israelite and you're living 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, and you worked your whole, you know, whether it's the spring harvest, you worked all winter to get your wheat, or you worked all summer to get your grain, are you really going to say, hey, you know what? It's time to go to Jerusalem for the feast, and nothing's ready yet. So remember, it's not just a week for the feast. It's about a week to get there. It's 8 days for the feast itself, whether it's the spring or the fall. Usually you're going to stay a couple extra days. You're not getting just a day you're getting there. Some people would stay 2 or 3 weeks, visit family, and then it's a week back. So minimal is a month. So if you left too early and you didn't have a harvest, what's going to happen? You're going to go to the feast and you're going to come back and all your fruits are laying on the ground rotten. And part of the command wasn't just going to Jerusalem, it's bringing the harvest fruits. It's going there in thanking Yahweh. So clearly, you have a later feast instead of earlier one. If we go to Leviticus 23 and verse 10. Leviticus 23 and verse 10 says, speak to the sons of Israel, and you shall say to them, when you come into the land that I am giving to you. And again, all the holy days were meant to be kept in the land. Why? Because it's the harvest of Israel that's connected with these holy days. Not the harvest of Niagara Falls or Arizona or any other place. He says, when you come into the land I'm giving you and have reaped its harvest. So now you've already reaped the harvest, at least the major portion of it, and have brought in the omer. The omer is, it's about 2 quarts. It's not a sheaf. It's a measurement of the beginning of your harvest to the priest. So here it is. Once you reap the harvest. So like now, if you only have, like in the year 2014, if you only have 10% barley, and they called it Aviv like they did last year with the same amount of barley, how do you bring your wave sheaf? The whole reason they're saying you have to go buy barley is you have to have Aviv barley for the wave sheaf, and yet they say that, and yet they'll call it Aviv when there's only 10% barley. So that means all the people in the north, they're not going to have any wave sheaf. But clearly here it says, after you reap the harvest. There has to be a harvest. There has to be representation from all the tribes, as we see in Scripture. All the tribes would bring it. Why? Because Yeshua was the sacrifice for not just Judah, but the sacrifice of all 12 tribes. So you would have to have representation in the south, in Jerusalem, in the Shephelah, the Jordan Valley, and the north. There'd have to be some. So clearly when we see this, it's after you're reaping the harvest, it clearly shows a later timing than an earlier one. And if you look in antiquity, I never heard ever, even one time, where this did not work, that if you wait till after the equinox, you will always have ripe barley. You know, that there's never a time, as long as you wait for the equinox to start your year, that your barley wouldn't be ripe at that time. Deuteronomy 16:13. We'll look again. Same thing. Deuteronomy 16:13. You shall perform the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days after you have gathered in from your grain floor and from your wine press. After you are gathered in from your grain floor and from your wine press. So again, if you're starting the year like last year, too early. If you're starting the year before the equinox, what's going to happen? You're going to have 100 degree weather on Yom Kippur in the end of August. And then you're going to be starting your Sukkot when there's no harvest yet. You're not going to have your harvest fruits there. And remember, a harvest doesn't take one day. It's minimal 2 to 3 weeks to harvest. Depending if you're one guy owning your property, it could even be more. But certainly it would take more than a day. You could look here, you could see these fields. Imagine if you had to be the guy out there without John Deere tractors doing the harvesting in biblical times. It would certainly take several weeks, 2 to 3 weeks. So here it is. It's not just that it has to be harvestable. You know, it's not just that it is Aviv, but then you have to harvest it. And then you have to go up to Jerusalem. So like I said, clearly it shows there's no way you could start your year in the beginning of March. You know, but again, if you wait till after the vernal equinox, then you simply look for the next new moon. It's so simple, you know. When do you add the 13th month? Because according to the biblical calendar, there's either 12 months or 13 months because the months are 29 and a half days or 354 day year. So there's going to be years you have to add it. So it's real simple. You don't need like the Jewish calendar, all of these mathematical calculations. All you do is you wait 12 months, and if the equinox didn't happen, you add a 13th month. It's a very, very simple thing that anybody can know. You don't need the mysteries of the rabbi to have to tell you and come out whether you can start your year or whether you can't start your year. And that's really where the crescent keeping, which we'll get into shortly, came from. You never, ever see Israel ever observing a sighting of a crescent moon to start the year before the Babylonian captivity. None. And I've talked to every expert. I've never seen one shred of evidence, definitely not biblical, but even historical, that Israel ever kept observed a crescent moon before the Babylonian captivity. They got the crescent from Babylon, they brought it back to the land, and it was a way for the rabbis to control the people. Because the rabbi had to see the crescent, and then he had to tell the people that the new month can start. But like we said, definitely Exodus 23:14. I'll go over one more scripture which showing on the equinox. Exodus 23:14. 3 times in the year you shall make a feast to me. You shall keep the feast of unleavened bread. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, as I have commanded you, at the set time of the month of Aviv. For in it you came out of Egypt, and you shall not appear before me empty. Also at the feast of harvest, the first fruits of your labor, of what you sow in the field. Also the feast of ingathering at the going out of the year. At your gathering, your work from the field. So we see it's the going out of the year. Now, if this is in the seventh month, what is he talking about? He's talking about the agricultural year. Because in Israel, we know the agricultural cycle starts in Aviv. That's when you have your first grain that's coming. That cycle goes until Shavuot. Then you have your summer, and then you get your harvest, your fall harvest fruits of pomegranates and dates and olives and those things. And then, of course, you start your new season. So Sukkot is the going out of the agricultural year, like he says. The Feast of Ingathering, that's why it's called that. It's the agricultural year that's going out. And then right after Sukkot, when you come back, what's the first thing you do? You go and you plant for the next year. And that's why the last day of Sukkot, what are they doing? They're praying for rain. Because if you come back and you put your seeds in the ground and you don't get any rain, what's going to happen? They can blow away, birds can eat it, anything. But you're certainly not going to have any fruit starting from that point. And as we know in Israel, that it's a very, very unique growing cycle, because even when the rains start, if you don't get that early rain in October, November, and then nothing came up, when it starts to rain in December, January, it'll be too cold. It'll be too cold for the grain to manifest, because that's what happens. If you get the early rain, as you've seen, it comes up like grass, little grass, but then it doesn't grow from there, because when the coldness comes, it goes dormant. So when you're getting all that rain in the ground, it might be going into the roots, but nothing's growing because it's too cold. And then all of a sudden, once the weather now starts coming, you know, when the changing of the year, all that rain is all soaked in the ground. As soon as the hot weather comes, boom, look how quick, right? It only took maybe 2 weeks for that grain to grow about a foot. It's unbelievable once Aviv comes, how quickly it comes. So that's the agricultural cycle that happens here. And like I was saying, the main reason why the barley hunters this year would not tell you it's barley, even though according to their own standard, they should have called it Aviv. I don't believe it's Aviv, but they do, is because of Exodus 13:10. You shall therefore keep this ordinance Passover in his season from year to year. And if they would have called Aviv last week, they would have had two Passovers in the same year. So that's why they had to say that there wasn't Aviv and make up any excuse for it. But literally, if they would just keep to the biblical mandate of making sure there's Aviv in all areas, you wouldn't have this problem. Because if you wait till the equinox, it's a moot point. Barley is not the parameter to start the year. Barley is simply something that you need for the Feast of First Fruits. Which the Feast of First Fruits, it's the first day of the week during Passover. So it can be as early as the 16th day of the first month, or it can be as late as the 21st, 22nd day. Well, not 22nd, but 20, maybe 21st day of the month. So since it's already 16 to 20 days after Aviv, it can't be the parameter for the start of the year, because you're already 20 days into your new year. And like I said, as long as you wait for the equinox, you'll always have barley for that time. 2 Chronicles 24:23. We see the word again, the tekufa. And it happened at the turn of the year that the army of Syria came up against him. So the turn of the year. Tekufa, clearly when we look in the Bible, that's the parameter. The separating of the seasons. And again, some places you live, like in America, you have four seasons. You have winter, summer, fall, and spring. But in Israel, we only have two seasons. 2 Chronicles 24:23. And it happened at the turn of the year that the army of Syria came up. In Israel, like it talks about in Genesis 8:22, you know, whether it's seed time or harvest or winter or summer, you know, that Yahweh would be with them. And you have two seasons here. So this is, the tekufa is the turning of the season. It's the turning from winter to summer. Another thing that people misrepresent is somehow they think that the Jewish calendar that's being used today is the calendar used by Yeshua in the first century. And not even the Jews say that. They know it's not. You can look in the Judea Encyclopedia or any encyclopedia for that matter, and it will clearly tell you the modern Jewish calendar came from Hillel II. It started in about 358 AD all the way to the 10th century. It took 600 years to codify that calendar. And it certainly is not the calendar of the first century. And if you look at even the rabbinical rules of the calendar in the Talmud from the second and third century, it totally contradicts the modern calendar. Like one of the things with the second and third century calendar was that it would say that the day of Yom Kippur can fall on any day of the week. But according to the modern Jewish calendar, Yom Kippur cannot fall on a Friday or a Sunday. People ask, well, what happens if it does? They just postpone it. You know, they just say, okay, if it doesn't fall on a convenient day, then we'll postpone it. So, and that's why I say, they start the year in the seventh month instead of the first month. They count back 177 days to make sure that Passover, not Aviv 1, is after the equinox. And then, if it falls on the wrong day of the week, they just postpone it for up to 2 days. So tell me where that comes from. You know, just illogical rabbinical reasoning. From the Encyclopedia Judaica, it says here, it is generally accepted that certain elements of the calculated Jewish calendar commonly in use today were codified in approximately 358 CE by the president of the Jewish Sanhedrin, Hillel II. So you can get that from anywhere. talks about from the extracts from the canals of Anatolius of the Paschal Festival in his writings about the year not beginning before the equinox, and Aviv 1 not coming before the equinox. And again, I'm not going to read all of these historical things today for time reasoning, but anybody who's watching this can go to the website, www.coyhwh.com. You could look in the book section. We have the book there on this, and you could get all the quotes from it. But I do want to hit the biblical ones because they're the ones that are most important. And this one in Psalm 19. Psalm 19. The heavens declare the glory of Elohim, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night shows knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. And he's talking about the constellations, because remember, there's 12 constellations. They tell the plan of salvation in the sky. And can you imagine, for the people that don't even believe in Yahweh, or the people that don't even believe in Yeshua, and here it is, every single month, the plan of salvation is told through the 12 constellations, the Maseroth, that it's called in the book of Job, that represent the 12 tribes of Israel. And clearly shows Yeshua is coming. We have a message I gave at Sukkot 2 years ago called the... something about the bridegroom. Signs in the heavens and the return of the bridegroom. There's also signs in the heavens 1 with Yeshua's birth, showing again the constellations lining up to what scripture says. But clearly, amazing scripture showing that here. And then it says their line is gone out through all the earth. Where's their line? The line coming through the earth from equinox to equinox. And their words to the end. In them has he set a tabernacle for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoices as a strong man to run a race. His going forth is from the ends of the heaven, and his circuit, the word there is tekufa again, equinox, unto the ends of it. And there is nothing hid from the heat thereof. So their circuit, the line going through the earth, the circuit, equinox to equinox. Equinox, a canopy coming over the earth, a circuit, is very clearly that's there. Same as we said in Deuteronomy 11:11. Yahweh watches the land from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, from equinox to equinox. There's over here a from the Anti-Nicene Fathers, from Peter the Bishop of Alexandria, a quote here, that talks about the Jews reckoning Passover incorrectly, because it says their beginning of the month, they're reckoning after the equinox. He says, but where are in the biblical times, in the days of Yeshua, the men knew that they were to celebrate it before the equinox. Like I mentioned, the Elephantine letters, going back between the years 471 to 402 BC, so like I said, the very time of Ezra and Nehemiah, all showing a new year beginning in Aviv 1 only after the equinox. Every single year, every single letter for those some odd 70 years, everyone would only start after the equinox. Here is from Philo, the historian that lived at the time of Josephus. And he says, after the sun, the ruler of the day, making two equinoxes every year, both in spring and in the autumn, the vernal equinox is in the constellation of Aries and the autumn one in Libra. And then he also says, they were also created to serve as measures of time, for it is by the appointed periodical revolutions of the sun and the moon and other stars that days and months and years are determined. That's from Philo on Creation, chapter 1, verse 59 and 60. He also says, Moses put down the beginning of the vernal equinox as the first month of the year. And that's Philo on Moses, chapter 2-222. He also says, then the 12 stones on the breast, which are not like one another in color, and which are divided into four rows of three stones each, what else can they be emblems of except the circle of the Maseroth? So he's saying that the breastplate stones from the priest all have to deal with the 12 constellations of the 12 sons of Israel for the Maseroth. And he says, which make up the seasons of the year, the spring, the summer, the autumn, and the winter, distinguishing the four changes, the two solstices and the two equinoxes, each of which has its limit of three signs of the Maseroth by the revolution of the sun. According to that unchangeable and most lasting and really divine ratio which exists in numbers. That's again coming from Philo. So clearly from Scripture, we are to start the year in spring after the vernal equinox and not in winter before it. Thus, the next new moon after the vernal equinox would be the beginning month of Aviv, thus always occurring in the spring. If the 12th month of the year, which is Adar, fell early enough to allow another new moon to occur before the vernal equinox and necessitated adding a 13th month and waiting until the vernal equinox was observed as the beginning of the spring of the year. The addition of an intercalary month always kept the first month of the year after the vernal equinox, and like we showed, that's exactly the way they did it in biblical times, because if not, you would not have your growing season in right. The year is an astronomical event determined by the sun. It is the point at which the revolution of the earth around the sun comes to its complete cycle. The sun determines the year, and the returning point of the sun is the vernal equinox. Determining Passover after the beginning of the year, as the beginning of the year, but not after the vernal equinox, will again throw your year off. And that's what the Jewish calendar does. They definitely agree, just like we do, that the equinox is the dividing point. Because like I said, you don't have a lot of other choices. Yet they say only Passover has to be after the equinox. And the first 13 or 12 days of the year can be before the equinox, which is totally illogical. Because like I said, Passover is not Aviv 1. Passover is Aviv 14. So if Aviv is the beginning of months, then it stands to reason logical that Aviv 1 would have to be in the new year and not in the old year. You wouldn't think of starting, even though we don't use the Roman calendar, many that may listen to this may understand it better, but you wouldn't start January 1st on December 14th or December 18th. One cycle has to end for a new cycle to begin. We don't see anything in Scripture that would do that. We don't start one day before the other day ends. We don't start a month before one month ends. And we don't start a year before the other year ends. And like I said, about every 3 to 4 years, the Jewish calendar does this. They're off this year. We're on the same. You know, we will have our new moon in about another 3 weeks. The Passover this year is the night of April, is it 13th? The day of April 14th, I think it is. Don't quote me on that, but I think it's April 14th is the Passover, and we keep it the night before after sunset. But again, in a couple of years, we're going to have the same thing again. They'll be starting their year before the equinox in the wrong time. So now what I would like to do in the rest of my time here is going over the beginning of the month, because it's another misnomer that comes up a lot of times. I heard a man one time, a man that I respect, he was an elder, and he told me that the Bible states hundreds of times that the month starts by a crescent moon. I said, well, if it states that 100 times, can you just show me one? Because I read the Bible up and down and over and back and forth, and I can't find even one scripture where it talks about starting your month by a crescent moon. If there was, it would be pretty easy, because to me, I really don't care. I didn't grow up with the biblical calendar, so it makes no difference to me how I calculate the time. I just want to do it correctly. And unfortunately, you can't find it. Matter of fact, when I found out that the little paper that I was being given for 15 years was incorrect, like I said, you become a believer, here's a paper, this is when the holy days is, okay. But then 15 years later, you find out, no, there's a calendar. The person who taught me by a crescent moon. So I was happy with it. But then as I'm a pastor and I'm trying to bring it to the brethren, and they're knocking it down and showing me every contradiction with going by a crescent, I had two choices to make. I can either change and start keeping the truth of what's shown, or you can try to deny it and run from it like people do for years. So again, truth is always our best way of going. And like I'm going to prove to you probably in the next 20 minutes, you don't have to take that long to do it. I'm not going to show you 20 hours of videotapes on how to know a crescent, because it really is not as complicated as they make it sound. But like I always say, you have to go to precedents. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. Yahweh works in the circular. He doesn't work in the linear. And whatever topic we're going over, if you can find Yahweh's precedent and Yahweh doesn't change, then you're going to know. The same as the purpose of man. You know, before, I was studying that years before I came out with that study publicly. But it always, something was wrong with me. That how on earth can Yahweh call incest such an abominable thing? And then over here, he's creating the world through incest. It don't make sense. You know, it just didn't fit with me well. And then in the end, we find out, no, he didn't. In the end, we could see here that Yahweh would never violate one law to do another law. He doesn't work that way. So when you find out that, yes, there were other humans that were there at creation, the Bible plainly proves that. It says he created them. It's in the plural. You see later where Adam and Eve only have Cain and Abel. There's no other children that are ever mentioned. And Cain is getting cast out. And what is he doing? He's marrying somebody. So this person came from somewhere. Yahweh's putting a mark on his head. So when he goes outside of Eden, all these people that are going to see him, then nobody will kill him. Well, who are these people? And then after that fact, they have another child that's called Seth. And it says Seth is the firstborn. There's no other ones up to that point. And Seth replaces who? Abel. So if we just go by the Bible without any preconceived idea, there's nothing else you can come up with that there had to be other human beings. So it's the same way here. Let's look at Yahweh's pattern. And let's see what the pattern is. We know how the day starts. At least most people do. There's still a controversy on that. I'll let you go to the book for that one. How does the day begin? I'm not going to get into some of the nonsense that people come up with. But a biblical day is very clearly. You look in the Bible, there was evening and there was morning day one. There was evening and morning day two. They're literal days. They're not millions of years in between. That's also another topic, but pretty easy to prove. So the day starts at sunset. We know in the beginning there was darkness. So darkness came before light. Yahweh said, let there be light, and then there's light. That's his precedent. So now, the day starts what? Do we go out and visually sight something for the day to start? No. We wait for the sun to disappear. When the sun is gone, you're not looking for anything. You're not visually sighting anything. The sun is gone and it's a new day. The same way with the equinox. When the equinox comes, do we visually go out and sight it? Are we going out? Can you see the sun coming around the earth and passing the equator? No, of course not. How do you see it? You see it by the shadow. You see it by the shadow. So it's the same thing with conjunction. Conjunction starts, how the month starts, is when you see the beginning of the month, it's darkness, and then after anywhere from 18 to 72 hours into the moon cycle, you'll see that there'll be a little crescent. And then the crescent will turn into a quarter moon. The quarter moon turns into a full moon. The full moon turns into a waning quarter moon. And then to a waning crescent. And then it resets itself. Pretty simple. And this way, when I look at during the month, because remember, we didn't have these little things called watches on our hands. You know, even on the Flintstones, they'll have those things with the sand on his hand like a watch. But that's just a cartoon. They didn't have those in biblical times. So how would people know when the time was? They knew it by the sun. You could know the time of the day by it. It's very easy. And you could know it by the sundial. You know, many people had sundials. You could make a basic sundial. Wilco showed us how to make it out of a piece of paper, cardboard, that anybody could do it, that you could see the shadow of it. So, again, you know the equinox by the shadow. You know the conjunction, again, by the dark, and that's the precedent that Yahweh is showing. That time starts in darkness. Time starts in darkness. Even life in the womb, right? The baby's in the womb. The baby is in darkness. Hebrews 11 and verse 1. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So do you have to see a crescent every month to know that it's the new moon, or do we just believe that Yahweh has it? And the other thing that's pretty interesting, the only evidence that I've ever seen that may be valid that someone tried to prove against a crescent is that they said, well, if you look in Genesis 1:14, it says the luminaries are for time. So if the luminaries are for time, then how can you go by a crescent? And the key is, which is really interesting, is at conjunction, because remember, the earth and the sun and the moon are not all the same size. So since they're different sizes, and the reason why you see the conjunction is the distance that the moon is from the earth, you know, when the conjunction happens. But there actually is light. Even at conjunction, there's light, you know. You just can't see it. But if you had a telescope and you put it and they've done it, there's a book that a guy wrote all on this. If you put the telescope and look, you would see, even at conjunction, there's light. So that throws that all theory out the window because it proves against them. Because there is light at conjunction, I just can't see it. So now does it come to the point where the moon starts when I see it? Now we're back to the barley. You know, you can't start your month until this guy sees barley and tells you it's there. It's not the way Yahweh works. Yahweh does not need man's intervention for his heavenly signs. He simply don't need it. And that's why the Masoret tells the plan of salvation in the heavens. And that's why day after day and day, month after month, Yahweh is showing it to all mankind by the constellations. He doesn't need our intervention. And every time man intervenes, all he does is mess it up. He doesn't make it easier. So at conjunction, even though you can't see the light with the naked eye, it's there. It's there. But clearly, the conjunction is the beginning of time. Because faith is the evidence of things not seen. It's there, but you can't see it. By faith, we understand the ages to have been framed, still in Hebrews 11, verse 3, by the word of Yahweh, so that the things seen should not come into being out of things that already appear. What came first, the chicken or the egg? You know? And the thing is, because of the cycle of the moon, you know, that you have the tilt of the earth and also of the moon and the 5-degree tilt that's there, what happens is 1 month, you can see a crescent maybe 18 hours after conjunction, but the next month it could be 70 hours. So here it is, some months, you are 3 days into the moon cycle and they're calling it the first day of the month. They're calling it Rosh Chodesh, the head of the month. And isn't it also interesting that when you're looking at the new moon, the word for moon is Yerach in Hebrew. You never see it with new moon. New moon is Rosh Chodesh, the head of the new. So what, if you're looking at the moon cycle, what is the beginning of the moon cycle? It's clearly conjunction. It is clearly conjunction. So now when crescent happens, 1 month it can be 18 hours into that cycle, but the next month it can be 3 days. It's not symmetrical. And that's what I say. Without these little watches, Yahweh made it where anybody can know the time. You don't need a rabbi that has to come out to the farmer out here and tell you the time. All you have to do is look up into the sky. And when you see a quarter moon, it's a quarter month. When you see a full moon, it's half month. When you see a quarter waning, it's three quarters gone. And then when it darkens, the month is resetting itself. It's so simple that a child can understand it. But if you're going by a crescent, it will never be symmetrical. When you see a quarter month, it's never going to be a quarter month. When you see the full moon, it's never going to be the full moon. When you see the quarter waning, it really isn't a quarter waning. It throws the whole symmetrical part off completely. And like I say, if the full moon is the opposite of the new moon, we say, if you had a whole apple pie, what is the opposite? No pie. You know, so it's pretty easy when you're just even looking from geometry, that how you start and how the beginning of it starts. So we see that the pattern that Yahweh does, he's symmetrical, he's perfect. Also, he does the pattern of the time starts in darkness. He doesn't have us visually go sight something. Why? Because when Israel is coming into the land of Canaan, it wasn't the land of Israel yet, when they're coming in here under Joshua, who's living here? The Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Hittites. And these people were moon worshippers. You know, they're literally moon worshippers. As a matter of fact, there was an article in the, I think it was the Jerusalem Post a couple of months ago. We were at the Israeli Museum. We got to see what they found in ancient Gesher. They found this stone of the moon god. And they're saying that's where Israel started keeping the crescent moon from, because he was the Canaanite moon god, you know. And would Yahweh really, when he's telling them to stay away from paganism, and he's warning them not to go into paganism, and he even gives them a commandment that I want to get into here, Deuteronomy 4:19. And what does he say? Not only isn't he telling them to go look at a crescent, he's telling them the opposite. And that you not lift up your eyes toward the heavens. And when you see the sun, the moon, and the stars, even all the hosts of heavens, and you be drawn away and worship them and serve them, which Yahweh your Elohim has allotted to all the people under the heavens. So he literally says the opposite. He says not to go out and look. Why? Because if they go out and look, they're going to start to worship. This was the propensity of these people. This was the mindset. So they're coming into a place where these people are already doing the same thing. They're already sighting the crescent moon. They already have moon gods. And he's particularly telling them, don't do this. Don't go out and look at a crescent every month, because then you're going to start worshiping. And I say that. We could show extremely clear from Scripture, the day starts at sunset, the day doesn't start at sunrise. And I say that because, like last night, you can go out at sunset, when the sun is gone, the new day has begun. There's nothing to visually sight. But I also say, if the day started at sunrise instead of sunset, in every Jewish house today, you'd have a sunburst instead of a menorah. It's human nature. Human nature is people have a propensity toward paganism. And that's why Yahweh purposely made it that there's nothing to sight, there's nothing to look for, there's nothing to make an Elohim out of. Deuteronomy 17:2. He says the same thing. When there is found among you in one of your gates, which Yahweh your Elohim has given to you, a man or a woman who does that which is evil in the sight of Yahweh your Elohim and transgressing his covenant, and has gone and served other gods and worshiped them, or the sun or the moon or the hosts of the heavens, which I have not commanded, and it has been revealed to you, and you have heard, and have searched, and behold, it is true, and the thing is confirmed, and the hateful thing is done in Israel, then you shall bring out to your gates that man or that woman who has done this evil thing, the man or the woman, and you'll stone them with stones, that they shall not die. So again, Yahweh purposely made it so they couldn't do this. Now, not only that, even when it came to Yahweh, he didn't want them to make an image of them. When we look today, look around the world, you see all of these Jesus pictures that came out of the Byzantine era. You know, what do you see? You see this European looking, you know, sometimes with the long haired with blue eyes, you know, this feral looking guy. Nothing like Yeshua would have looked. Absolutely nothing. You know, he lived in the Middle East. He would have had dark skin. He was about 5'3". That's the average height of a Jew. And he would have looked like any other Jew. How do we know? Because even when Judas is coming to the Garden of Gethsemane, he had to have a sign to recognize Yeshua from the other apostles. Now, if Yeshua was a foot taller, they would have said, get the tall guy. If he had long hair, they would have said, get the guy with long hair. You know, if he had some kind of feature that was different than everybody else, he wouldn't have needed a sign so they know which one is Yeshua. But Yeshua was, it talks about this in Isaiah 53, it was just an average-looking person that looked like anybody else. So if Yahweh wouldn't want us to even have a picture of Yeshua, because he doesn't want us to make pictures of Yeshua, it's idolatry. He says it in the second commandment. You're not to make a stone image or any kind of image of him. And even when he appeared to the people at Mount Sinai, look at Deuteronomy 4, and look at how he appeared to the people. And you drew near and stood, Deuteronomy 4 and verse 11, and you drew near and stood below the mountain, and the mountain burned with fire to the heart of the heavens, darkness, cloud, and thick gloom. So when Yahweh appears, what happens? Thick darkness and cloud comes around the mountain, and why? Verse 12, and Yahweh spoke to you out of the midst of the fire. You heard the sound of words, but you did not see a form, only a voice. Because if they saw a form, what would they have done? They would have made some kind of deity from it. A matter of fact, when you look at the golden calf incident, what did they say? They didn't make a new deity. They made the golden calf and they said, that calf is Yahweh. And they started saying, this is Yahweh. But Yahweh's not a calf. The same way, if he showed whatever form he would have shown them, they would have made an idol out of it. So logically think to yourself, if Yahweh knows this, he knows they're coming into the land of Canaan that is filled with paganism. Matter of fact, three times he has to say, don't boil a kid in its mother's milk, which was a Canaanite practice. You know, not once, but three times he has to say it. Because why? He doesn't want them acting like pagans. He doesn't want them looking like pagans. Another thing they did, they had cultic goatee beards. And he says they're devil-like goatees, even today. You know, go on the website to the Church of Satan, and you'll see the leader of the Church of Satan has a goatee, devil-like beard. So what does he say? Don't do it. Don't shave the corners of your beard, because I don't want you looking like a devil god. It's pretty simple. You know, if we're going to worship the one true Elohim, why would we want to look like a false Elohim? Does that make any sense? Of course not. So would it make any sense when you're coming into the land of Canaan and they're worshiping the moon god that he's going to tell them every month to go out and sign a crescent moon? Of course not. Because even with himself, he wouldn't let them see his image, so he wouldn't do that. And he purposely, like the scriptures we just read, not only doesn't he command them to do it, he says, don't do it. I don't want you to go and look out at the sun, the moon, and the stars and worship them and make an idol out of them. The other thing that's interesting is that I told you the gentleman that I knew, a man that I respected a lot, he was an elder who said it's more than 100 times in the Bible about the crescent moon, and of course it's not there once as far as new moon. Every time the word new moon is there, it's Rosh Hodesh, which literally means the head of the new. Also, when you look at Israel or Hebrew being a pictographic language, it was one of the things I thought of years back. I said, you know what? Let me look at the pictograph that's there for new moon. And if you take the word for new moon and you look at the pictograph, it literally is the separation or the fence of the cycle of the consuming moon. See, the moon never stops, even in conjunction. Everything doesn't freeze, you know, like everyone stop now. Okay, now you can go. No, it's always moving. And the sun's going this way, the earth's going this way, and the moon's going this way. But there's that 1 second where they all line up and they keep moving. So the separation of the moon cycle is conjunction. There's nothing else where everything lines up completely. That is the only time where it's the separation of the moon cycle. And that's the word picture for it. So I thought, wow, this is great. This clearly shows that it has to be. The other thing, though, is like I said, although whenever it's talking about the new moon, never even once does it use the word crescent. The Bible does use the word crescent three times. But it doesn't use it with the new moon. It uses it with occultism. It uses it with paganism. One of the scriptures is Isaiah 3, 18 and 19. In that day, Yahweh will take away the beauty of the ankle bracelets, the headbands, and the crescents, the pendants, the bracelets, and the veils. So he's saying he's going to rip it off of the people in that day. The word for crescent is Saharon. Saharon is the word for crescent. So whenever it's used, and the three times it's used toward paganism. It's used toward having an amulet of a crescent moon. And even today, when you look at the crescent moon, it's used for Islam. It's used for communism. It's never used for anything good. It's always used in occultism. But again, the word for Yarak, for moon, and the word for crescent, you never once in the Bible see together for calculating the new moon. So to me, it's pretty inconceivable that Yahweh would use such an occultic pagan symbol to start the biblical calendar every single month. And like I said, considering that it's not even symmetric, how on earth can 1 month you be 18 hours into the cycle and the next month you're 70 hours? And be 3 days in the moon cycle and you're just calling it the first day of the month? It's totally illogical and throws off your whole pattern. Psalm 81 and verse 3. Psalm 81 and verse 3, which to me was the clincher, the checkmate. Because like I said, if you're going to preach a doctrine, you have to have at least one conclusive scripture that proves your point on that doctrine. And with the crescent moon, there's none. There's zero. There's only three times the crescent moon is mentioned. It's never with the new moon. It's always with the occultism. But here in Psalm 81 in verse 3, blow the ram's horn in the new moon at the covered moon on our feast day. Blow the ram's horn in the new moon at the covered moon on our feast day. The word for covered moon is keseh. Keseh. So here it is. This is not debated by the rabbis. They all say this is the feast of trumpets. There's no other new moon celebration that is a holy day, that is a feast day. Only the first day of the seventh month. And when are you blowing it? At the new moon, at the covered moon. Very, very clear. The word is used if you put a lid on a garbage can and you're covering it. It's called keseh. Keseh is literally to fully cover, to fully conceal. So that's what it is. It's the concealed moon because it's there, but it's concealed by darkness. And literally that should be the translation of that. Blow the moon in the new moon at the covered moon on our feast day. Checkmate. What more do you need? What on earth more would you need? Although all the other things come together. The other thing is, if you look at Leviticus 23 and verse 24, because now the first day of the seventh month is a holy day. There's only one new moon holy day. Of course, there's 12 or 13 new moons in a year. They are set apart time. They are wonderful days to get together and do things. And as we've seen, even have barbecues, which is a lot of fun. But there's only one that is actually a Sabbath. The first day of the seventh month is called a Sabbath day. It's a high Sabbath. It's the Sabbaton. It's a holy day Sabbath. So logically think to yourself. Now, if you're going by conjunction, you can know every moon of the year before the year comes because it's a symmetrical cycle. And it repeats itself. The moon cycle is a 19-year cycle. So after 19 years, it will just repeat and repeat and repeat. So if you know one new moon in history, it doesn't matter when it is. I know the new moon that happened in the third month in the year 364. If I know that, I know every moon. Because it'll go backward and it'll go forward. The cycle repeats itself over and over and over. It's a 19-year moon cycle. But if you're going by a crescent moon, you don't know when the month starts till you see the crescent. And the crescent doesn't happen at sunset. The crescent happens whenever. It can be a half hour, it can be hours later, who knows? It depends on where you are in the world and where, you know, that particular month. So logically think to yourself, if you're commanded to keep the first day of the seventh month holy, how can you keep it holy if you don't know if it's the day or not? Would Yahweh command something that here it is, sunset comes, the day started, and you still don't know whether this is the holy day or not? So now 2 hours later, well, it didn't come. I guess it's not the holy day. Okay, go back to the dishes. Does that make any sense? Absolutely not. Because holy days, and especially Sabbaths, are so important that every Sabbath has a preparation day. That's how important they are, because we can't do any work on the Sabbath. So every single Sabbath, Yahweh gives us a preparation day to prepare for that. So would he give us a Sabbath that even after sunset, we wouldn't know if it's the Sabbath or not? It's illogical. It doesn't fit his pattern. So that alone should tell us you can't go by a crescent. There's no way that it would be a crescent moon. That there'd be a commanded holy day to do something. You're supposed to blow the trumpet. So how do you blow the trumpet if you don't know whether that's the day or not? You know? It would never, Yahweh would never do it that way. It works totally against his pattern. Leviticus 23, verse 24. Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, on the first of the month, a holy day Sabbath shall be to you, a memorial acclamation of the resounding of trumpets, a holy day gathering. So there's no way. There's no way that at sunset we're going to be looking at each other trying to figure out whether it's the day or not until the crescent comes up or doesn't come up. And what would happen if you happened to have to go to the toilet during that 15 minutes that the crescent came out and you didn't see it? Then maybe one is keeping it and one's not keeping it. That's not the way Yahweh works. That's confusion. That's absolute confusion. And the other thing is, and remember, in biblical times, even when they were looking at the crescent, right? They have to put fires across the hills to all the people. So some of them might not even know until the next morning that it was. So how would they know? How would they know whether that was the Sabbath day or not? You know, so logically, it just doesn't fit. That fact alone clearly shows that the calendar has to be calculated according to conjunction, because we have to know when the holy day is so that we can prepare for it. I have, like I said, I think I've shown conclusive evidence of Scripture to show that the month starts by conjunction. Blow the trumpet in the new moon at the covered moon. That's conjunction. What I would like to do is, for anybody who's listening to this, or if you're here, I have three questions that I want to ask somebody who keeps the crescent. Three simple questions that I've never gotten an answer for. Even from the top crescent keepers in the world that I've talked to, and like I said, I don't go to bring my point, you know, not unless they ask me. I go to learn, because maybe I could be wrong. But I've asked this question to every single person who's a crescent keeper, and I've never gotten an answer. Here are the three questions I want to ask. Number one, what do you do if it's cloudy? What do you do if it's cloudy? See, one of the big things with the crescent people is, it's so important that you have to keep the new moon right. You know, and if you don't keep it right, you know, some of them even say you're going to hell and all these things. Well, what if it's cloudy? How do you know whether the crescent's out or not? And the answer is, well, if it's cloudy, we keep it the next day. But what if it was there? You're keeping it the next day, but that doesn't solve the problem. So what is, it's just like if I went to the toilet and I didn't see it. You know, then I'll keep it the next day. That's not an option. You know, there's one, the first day of the seventh month is a Sabbath. It's a holy day. And if you keep that one wrong, that means you're going to keep Yom Kippur wrong. If you miss the first new moon of the first month, that means you're going to keep Passover on the wrong day. Well, I wouldn't want to do that when the children of Israel, the death angel's coming. I wouldn't want to be a day late. What if it was cloudy on that night when the death angel was passing? You know? Well, we'll do it tomorrow. You wake up the next day and half the people are dead. You know, so logically think to yourself, it can't work that way. It can't work that you're commanded to do something that you can't do if it's cloudy. It just logically wouldn't be that way. Because cloudiness doesn't change the fact whether it's there or not. The same way, like I said, every month at conjunction, there's light. The fact that we don't see it doesn't change the fact that it's there. So the same way, if there's a cloud and you can't see it, it doesn't change the fact that that might be the crescent that night. Doesn't change the fact at all. The second thing that I ask is, do you go by local sighting of the crescent in your local area, or do you go by the crescent sighting in Jerusalem? And it's debated with crescent keepers if you talk to them. Some go by local sighting, some want to go by Jerusalem. There's a problem to both ways, though. See, when I started keeping the biblical calendar, and like I said, the first person who taught it to me was a crescent keeper. Now, I was a pastor of one congregation in New Jersey. I was a pastor of a second congregation in Pennsylvania, which was about an hour and a half away. In that year, the new moon was falling right at the time of the equinox. One congregation saw it, one congregation didn't. One was keeping the holy day then a month later than the other. And I'm saying, that's what got me thinking, there's something wrong here. There's no way, you know, when Paul says, I want you all to be preaching the same thing, and there's only one day, 14th day of the first month, how can this congregation be keeping it here, and this one is keeping it a month later? So I knew that local sighting couldn't work. Because if you're doing local sighting, you can have up to three different days of the holy day, depending on where you're watching it. And Yahweh's not the author of confusion. There's one holy day. There's one Sabbath. There's not a Sabbath in North America on Sunday and a Sabbath in South America on Tuesday. There's one Sabbath day. It starts in 24 hours. It goes around the earth. We all keep the same Sabbath day. So it's got to be the same. So local sighting just didn't work. And anyway, the holy days are when you enter the land. So it's got to be. It's got to be. So people say, no, we go by Jerusalem sighting. Got another problem. Nobody was here for 2,500 years. So what were you doing? From the time of Yeshua, he told us, you must keep Passover every year. If you're waiting for the sighting of the new moon in Jerusalem, then you haven't kept the Passover in 2,520 years until 1948. And even far beyond that. Because there's only locally, maybe in the last 10 years, somebody here that's actually citing it and sending it out on the internet. Which again, what do you do before the internet? Even if there was somebody here. How would you know it? Be a lot of fires to start in Jerusalem and get all the way across to North America. You know? How are you going to get your fires going across the Atlantic Ocean? Doesn't work. Absolutely doesn't work. So it's got to be something. If I'm commanded to keep something, and we're all over the world in diaspora, it's got to be a way we can calculate it without somebody telling me that they saw a crescent or didn't see a crescent. That's why I say conjunction, it doesn't matter where you are on the earth, everybody can calculate for themselves. That's the second question. And the third question is, like I said, since the moon's path has a 5-degree angle compared to the earth, the new moon can be seen as early as 18 hours after conjunction 1 month, or 72 hours after another month. Almost a 4-day difference. How could you be almost 4 days into your moon cycle and call it day one? It's illogical. It simply don't work. And like we said, that your holy day will never fall on the full moon, which we know in biblical times, the new moon starts on conjunction, the full moon was always the holy day. And it never works that way if you're going by crescent keeping. So, to me, I think it's extremely conclusive. If you're looking at it from an unbiased standpoint, you look at the scriptures, blow the trumpet at the new moon, at the covered moon on your feast day, you see that Yahweh commands us not to go out and sight a crescent. There's not one scripture remotely in the Bible that ever tells us to go sight a crescent. And for the crescent keepers, I have these three questions that I've never had one answered. And I say it in sincerity. If somebody is close-minded, I don't want to give them my opinion because I'm not here to fight with anybody. But I'll ask them. If they're convicted of this, then I'll ask them. And I've never got an answer because you won't get an answer. There is no answer. The answer is it can't be the crescent. Because again, if you're going to postpone your holy day because of a cloud, then you got a problem there. What's the difference of postponing Saturday to Sunday or any other day? There are no postponements to Yahweh's calendar. He gives us specific days to keep these holy times, and they come from the heavens, and He's the one that orchestrates them by the sun, the moon, and the stars. So I am going to stop there. Again, for anybody who may be listening to this, please, you can go online. You can freely download our book on the biblical calendar. If you have any questions, you can write to us. But I hope this is a blessing. If you come to Israel, we do go to biblical places here that's specifically work with the biblical calendar. We have a woman who comes to our school that teaches a whole day on the biblical calendar. And it's amazing because there's so many things in scripture that you'd never think of. You know, the plants, all the different things. That, like I said, grass. How many times is the word grass in there? But we see in Hebrew, there's 4 or 5 different words for grass. And every one of them is a different phase of the grain. So it's a really amazing when you come to Israel and you really learn all the things that's connected to the biblical calendar. So Yahweh bless. Shabbat shalom.